BoagWorld.com is the podcast for all those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis. And you're listening to Season 1, Episode 4, Calls to Action. And this episode is, as always, sponsored by Shopify. And you can start taking e-commerce jobs again today. Shopify does all the legwork for you with zero installation, plenty of themes and apps ready to be used. Oh, and no learning curve for those clients. Sign up as a partner via shopify.com/BoagWorld and you'll get a 40% revenue share on your client's first month. Podcast for all those involved in designing, developing, and running websites on a daily basis. Okay, so this week, as I said mere moments ago, in my best, what was it, American...
Calls to Action!
My best American TV presenter voice.
I wish I had the exact words you said.
I do. Don't know. Do you want me to read it back?
No learning curve for your clients and stuff like that.
Yes.
And I was
my
giggling.
Shopify ad.
Yeah.
I like Shopify. They're good.
Mm.
And I feel that I do... He's sitting there eating a whisper.
Mm.
A.
Chocolate.
I'm not allowed chocolate at the moment.
This is why I'm doing it.
B. You shouldn't be eating on a podcast.
Why?
Well, that sound isn't too bad. It's the... into
I'm
the microphone. That probably is disturbing most of our listeners.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm still eating it.
And there we go.
Yum. I should have got a coffee as well.
I can't understand you when your face is stuffed full of chocolate. Was that something about coffee?
Look,
he's covering his mouth all daintily now.
Mm. I shouldn't talk with my mouth full.
No, it's very bad. Did your mother drag you up or bring you up?
Don't bring my mother into this.
Ooh, my word. Gary Marcus. Obviously deep-seated family issues there. We won't get into it right now. So, calls to action. There we go. Do them.
No, we haven't talked. We haven't prattled long enough.
Okay. No, it's okay. Don't start. We're not bringing prattling back into the beginning of the show. That's what we agreed.
I didn't agree to it.
You just bigging up your part.
I had my fingers behind my back.
Oh,
crossed.
That'd be it.
So, yeah, but of course, because you're making me do these kind of one after the other, after the other, after the other, I've got nothing to add.
Good. Great. Right. So, calls to action. That's what I'm doing.
calls to action. Yeah, go on then. What?
All about moving users from a passive state of mind into a more active role. And calls to action are great as well because they can help you measure the success of your website. Otherwise, you won't be able to track your return on investment, which, after all, is what the entire season is all about.
Yes.
However, actually, interestingly, calls to action don't just provide business benefits. They help your users, too. And let me explain by giving you an example. Okay?
Okay.
This story doesn't reflect
kind
particularly
of
well on me.
Buttons. Sort of go here. Next. Arrows.
I've no idea what you're talking
about.
That's
helping users, isn't it?
Okay, yes. Yeah.
So the website shouldn't have navigation. They should just have next, 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 next.
Yeah, like a book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, books are a lot simpler to use. Let's be honest. Right, no. My story that I'm going to tell.
You tell us a story.
It's going to be bad for two reasons. One is it's going to make me look like a thickie. And two, it's going to be being rude about Apple, which is as we
I was rude about Apple
last week. Yes, I know. And what the consequences of that?
I kind of decided I was going to do it beforehand. It was fun, right? Liberating. Even.
Yeah, liberating. Well, it's my turn this week.
So, rude about Apple.
Right.
Really.
So, yes, here we go. So, after months, dear listener, settle down. What is it they used to say? Are you sitting comfortably?
I said, yes.
Then
with
I'll
chocolate.
Begin. Okay. All right, yes, you've got chocolate. After months of listening to Apple fanboys tell me about how great Apple products were, one day I decided to buy my first MacBook. Mm. All I had to do was walk into a store and buy it. Unfortunately, this was harder than expected. I'll do my best telling a story voice.
Stop it. Just talk normally. Okay. You're worrying me.
Right, okay. The problem was the store didn't have the normal visual cues you expect to find. If you've ever been in an Apple store, you know how weird they are, basically. There's no box product to pick up and take to a cashier. For that matter, there's no cashier, which is bizarre. Where was I meant to pay? So after standing there looking like a tool for a few minutes, I wandered over to the Genius Bar. No, that didn't look right. People were getting tech support, not actually purchasing stuff. So where was I meant to go? What was I meant to do? Eventually, I asked an assistant and they dealt with my purchase. However, I felt foolish and was left the store feeling slightly flustered. So what the problem was is I needed an indication of what I was meant to do. I needed a call to action. And that is indeed what we're going to be talking about, both in terms of how they benefit the business, but also how they benefit users. And I'm actually going to start off with a little snippet of an interview I did with Jared Spall on exactly this subject. And we're going to hear what he's got to say about calls to action. So I thought, as you know, I want to talk about calls to action today. And I thought it'd be a really good place to start, really just for you perhaps to share what your definition is of a call to action. Because I guess a lot of people, when they think about calls to action, they're thinking about making a purchase on an e-commerce site. But I'm guessing that your definition would be probably broader than that.
Yes. I think in a bigger picture, the call to action is a stimulus that basically creates a response of taking something to the next level, taking something to the next step. So it can be something very explicit, like, you know, for more information, click here. Or it can be something very, very subtle that is just, you know, a picture or image that just says, oh, wow, okay, this feels like where I should go next.
Perhaps there's a difference between calls to action and kind of next steps. I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
I do know exactly what I mean. But I think that's really the distinction is to me, a call to action is on the provider side, right? This is what we want you to do next.
Okay.
And what happens with the dead ends on the university websites, I think, is more on the receiver side.
Yeah.
It's, gee, okay, I have figured out that this is exactly the right course that I want to take, and this professor sounds amazing. Now how do I sign up for it? And that's where you get yourself into trouble, is that there is no logical next step, which I wouldn't consider to be a call to action. I would consider that to be, okay, what is the user supposed to do when they get here? Which is, you know, if they love what you've said, how do they continue down the process of their goal? Because they didn't come to the site to say, I want, you know, they didn't wake up in the morning and say, I want to read the most incredible economics class description I can find, and then I will consider my day a success, right? That's an unlikely end goal.
Yeah.
So the end goal is I want to register for this university, or I want to sign up to audit this class, or whatever it might be. And we need to take that full experience into account.
So, I mean, that brings us on to kind of how you can improve your calls to action. Are there certain things that you think, you know, that is good practice when it comes to dealing with calls to action? I mean, you mentioned there an example of essentially kind of reassuring the user. What about things like wording of calls to action or I don't know, what happens after you click on a call to action? You know, what are the kind of areas that people need to focus on?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I think one is you have to be clear in what pressing that button or clicking on that link is going to deliver.
Mm-hmm.
You have to mitigate any risk. So you have to have message that says, look, we're not signing you up to be trapped into something. This is safe. And then when you get to the next page, It can't have any surprises on it. It can't suddenly be asking for things that are unrelated. It can't appear to have six more steps to get the thing done. You know, if you said, oh, it's as simple as clicking here, and then the next thing you know, it's a 20-minute process, you're going to see high abandonment out of that. For sure, and it's not going to help your brand experience.
I more and more I'm beginning to kind of realize with this kind of thing that actually the consequences of all of this go way beyond the website.
It is truly about the entire experience. And, you know, people don't segment out the website use from other interactions.
Absolutely. That's great, Jared. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I wish we could talk longer, but we've already got way more than I'll be able to fit into the show. But hopefully we'll release this interview separately as well. So much appreciated. Thank you very much. So as you heard me just say, we will put the whole of the interview for Jared Sport online. So you need to subscribe at boangworld.com to make sure that you pick that up and you get to hear his words of wisdom on calls to action. Because to be honest, he probably knows a lot more about this subject than me. That was a point where you said, no, he doesn't, Marcus.
Sorry, I wasn't listening.
Oh, shut up. Right.
I was waiting to challenge you on your your experience.
You're reading ahead. What, my Apple experience?
Yeah.
What are you saying? I'm a thickie?
Well, yeah. No, what I'm saying is, I don't know what I'm saying. It's just thoughts are occurring.
Because, I mean, Jared, in the bit we've just listened to, except you haven't, because you haven't actually listened to it, but he actually differentiates between calls to action, which is things that you want someone to do, and kind of signposts and guiding people, which is for the user's benefit. Mm. So I don't know whether this would actually, my experience in the Apple Store, would need a call to action or whether it was just a guide. But for the sake of this kind of discussion, I'm going to bundle it all together.
Yeah, it's a weird one. I think it's a little bit, obviously some calls to action are really obvious.
Yes.
Buy here.
Yes.
Enter whatever.
Except it wasn't in the Apple Store because there was no buy here indicators.
Yeah, but if you go, obviously, the way that the Apple Store works, the walk-in store, they've probably thought about this and looked at their business objectives and kind of prioritised them. And yes, of course, buy product is going to be very important, but the journey to get there probably, they figure, involves touchy-feely, going ooh a lot.
Yeah.
And being helped individually by one of the people that works there. So you don't actually have to know, pay here.
Because you've already got someone helping you.
Yeah, but maybe. I don't know. But I don't know whether that's right or not.
I mean, it depends on, and I think that works great as long as you follow through with that. But the problem was, is it was a busy store, so I didn't get the help.
Yeah.
So I'm left wondering what to do.
Also, if you just want to go in and buy a mouse, but then I suppose you'd know how it worked.
By that stage, probably.
And they are actually usually on shelves and you can go and pick one up.
Yeah.
But it's the expensive stuff.
Yeah. But you pick one up, now where'd you go with it?
Just walk around in circles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I'll be interested to hear what other people think. And you can, what I'll do is if you go to the forum, if you go to boagworld.com/season/1, you can get a link to the forum there, or just go straight to the forum, whichever you'd prefer. And there is a section dedicated to this podcast, and I'm going to start a thread, do Apple stores suck? And you can put your thoughts
My
in
experience
there.
In the New York flagship store was excellent.
Well, whoopee-doo for you.
No, and it was absolutely rammed with people.
Mm.
Superb.
Well,
they did have about 1,000 people with blue T-shirts on helping you out.
Yeah, and that's the key, isn't it? Is there someone that's identifying you
quickly? But I got kind of ushered
off
into a little kind of area that you couldn't realise. You couldn't just walk into. Didn't look like you couldn't just walk into it, but you had to be kind of let in. Sat me down, chat me through this.
Huh?
And then wandered off, got the iPad, came back, with the how do you want to pay, sir, and whipped this thing out of her pocket. All done.
I mean, that's great. Super. That's great. So you might think I'm being totally foolish over the whole thing. Fine. But it's a useful example to say, you know, okay, let's to get out the Apple Store.
Sure.
Because Marcus is being awkward about it.
No, I'm not. I don't know whether I agree with you or not.
We've all been to a website where we're left unsure about what to do next.
Mm-hmm.
We've all been there.
Oh, yeah. All the time.
And that's often because the site owner has failed to give us any kind of guidance. They failed to give us a call to action.
They didn't do any usability testing, usually. Sorry, am I jumping ahead all over the place here?
You do whatever you... No, actually, you're jumping back. We talked about usability testing last week.
I know we did.
We've moved on.
Yeah.
I mean, the web is basically meant to be a massive interconnected network of pages. However, in reality, a large number of those pages are dead ends, aren't they? Mm. And this gives users only two options, leave or go backwards. And as humans, we're not the kind of going back over old ground, except for Marcus, who obviously wants to do usability testing from last week.
So it's a very presumptuous statement, that is, where we have all forging forward kind of people as a race.
What, do you want citations from me now? Show your workings, Mr. Boag. Therefore...
Oh, that's scary, isn't it? taking you back.
The consequence... I don't know why I'm bothering. Right.
Carry on.
So,
stop.
A good call to action makes your site sticky. It draws the user onwards towards a final goal. However, calls to action are not just about avoiding dead ends and that leave users unsatisfied. It's also about helping users complete key tasks. Take, for example, the browser manufacturer Mozilla. If you visit their Mozilla website at getfirefox.com, you can be pretty much guaranteed that if they go to a URL called getfirefox.com, they will probably want to download a copy of Firefox. Therefore, it's hardly surprising that their website sports possibly the largest call to action known to man, this massive Firefox download link button thing.
Yeah.
So hopefully I've kind of persuaded you that calls to action help both your business and also your users. So the next question then becomes, how do I decide on my calls to action?
I've got an issue with
of course you have.
With their URL.
What, Get Firefox?
Get Firefox. Because it sounds a bit spammy. And if you went to a list from...
That isn't their only URL, by the way. It just happened to be the one that I picked. It reroutes to their main one.
Do you do that, though? If you're searching on something, trying to find a bit of software or something like that, and searching Google, get the Google lists, and you kind of look at the URLs, kind of cynically, I do.
Never. I've honestly never done that.
I look at them and think, that's spam. That's
okay,
spam.
So do I need to start a new thread going, do you look at URLs? Do you judge websites by their URL?
But in this case...
With Dropbox, is getdropbox.com.
Yeah. I don't.
And we had a product called Get Sign Off.
Yeah.
You have a problem with the word get, do you?
I don't know. I'm in a bit of a kind of I don't know mood.
You're just
today.
In an argumentative mood, as always. So what are we talking about now? How to decide on your calls to action. Yeah, so calls to action is anything that basically moves the user. The professionalism of this show is just beyond
just
belief,
awesome.
Isn't it? Moves the user from a passive consumer into an active participant. Right, so, I mean, that could be anything. As you know, it could be as mundane as a common hypertext link. I can't speak.
Just say
today.
Link.
Yeah, but it sounds better if you go the common hypertext link. But it could also include purchase buttons, sign-up forms, download links, checkout processes, RSS subscriptions, vouchers, telephone numbers, email links, contact forms, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Loads of things, basically. Notice that not all of these also that I've just listed are sales-orientated. There's often a perception that calls to action only really apply to e-commerce sites. They do not. Calls to action can be transactional, sure. However, they can also be users requesting information or signing up for a web application or lots of other things besides.
Yeah, I mean, it can be kind of encouraging someone to leave a comment.
Absolutely.
For example.
And I think this is really important. When I was talking earlier about, you know, dead-end pages, I think it's really important that basically all web pages have some form of call to action, some next step that you want to encourage users to take. Users should never be left at a dead end, not knowing what to do next. However, that is not presuming that all calls to action are equal. And I think when you write a list of the calls to action on your site, you need to think about not just a kind of site-wide calls to action, but individual pages calls to action or section calls to action. These kind of micro calls to action aim to do two things. Firstly, to keep the user on the site, and secondly, to move them one step forward towards your overall call to action, your site-wide calls to action. So, for example, at the bottom of each blog post on Boag World, there are two calls to action. There are related posts, other stuff that is designed to keep you on the site.
Yep.
And then there's also, what did you think about this post, which is where you say either it's not my cup of tea or it's excellent, please show me more. Now, if you say it's excellent, please show me more, that's when we actually sell Headscape Web Design Services, right, amongst other things. So my point is that there's that perfectly shows both. The first one, the related posts, is about keeping them on the site. The second one is about taking them a step closer to our overall business objective of higher Headscape.
Yes.
Obviously, Boag World is completely altruistic and we don't do it just to get your web design work. That's the point you're supposed to jump in and say, yes, it is.
Sorry.
Your business.
Again, wasn't listening.
Your business development director.
No, because that's...
God, you're so pathetic.
It's not only that, is it? It's partly to do with
it's
that.
To hug people and make them feel loved. We just want
their
money. Just want their money.
I think you would do it anyway.
Yeah, but that's to do with my ego.
So that's not the only reason for having the site then, is it?
Yeah, but saying I do it as an ego trip for me doesn't sound as good as saying I want your money.
It's both.
So basically, we've got two reasons doing the Boag World, neither of which are very nice.
It's not just your ego, Paul. You're just saying that. You can't help but talk to people.
I'm a natural enthuser.
You
that
are.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I'm being nice for once.
All right, okay. So I've forgotten what we're talking about now. Page level calls to action. So one method of ensuring that every page has a call to action is to use a content template. I think we've mentioned content templates before in the past.
Yes.
Basically, anybody that writes content for your website should get a page template or a content template, which they have to complete before they can write the page of content. And it asks questions like, who's the page aimed at? What's the main message that the page should communicate? What will users learn from this page? But most crucially, in the case of this conversation, is what next step should users take? Mm. And that kind of focuses the content provider on thinking about calls to action and the next step, so to speak. And it ensures that users are always moving closer to your main objective. And although these page level calls to action exist to move the user towards, an overall site-wide objective, that doesn't mean that you can only have one site-wide call to action. You can actually have multiple site-wide calls to action, if that makes sense.
Yes.
It's not unusual for a website owner to have several things that they want to achieve, calls to action across the site, in the same way as we have multiple business objectives. They might have, for example, a call to action of buy our product and another one sign up for a newsletter. And that's actually a good example of having multiple calls to action, because sometimes a user isn't ready to buy, and you don't want them just leaving without you having the ability to upsell to them later. So in such cases where you've got those multiple calls to action, I think it's quite important to prioritize them. Begin by establishing your primary call to action, your primary objective here. What must the user do above all else? And knowing this allows you to design the site in such a way that the user will be in no doubt as to what ultimately they should be doing. So,
the primary call to action for Boag World then?
Stuff worth buying. The whole bottom of the site is dedicated to that.
Is it? It's not promoting Headscape.
That's part of stuff worth buying, our web design services.
Okay.
It has books, videos, Headscape, and the consultancy clinics.
Okay.
Have you ever looked at the Boag World site?
A couple of years ago.
Yeah. But I do think that I do as I say and not as I do. Well, you know what it's like with your own site. Now you just embarrass me. Of course, let's be honest, on an extremely large site with a diverse audience, it might be necessary to have multiple primary calls to action across different sections or subsections of the site. I think this is fine as long as they're not competing for users' attention. If a user is faced with conflicting choices, they often choose not to choose, as has been demonstrated time and time again with various studies in retail.
Mm.
So your secondary calls to action should be less prominent so as not to distract from the main goal. However, they do play an important role. They exist to move the user towards the ultimate objective. For example, asking people to sign up for a newsletter is a much smaller step than asking them to purchase, the point I made earlier.
Yep.
Once a user signs up for a newsletter, then they're more likely to eventually make a purchase. Just don't allow the newsletter sign up to overshadow the purchasing. You get the idea now. I'm labouring the point. The problem of overshadowing is more common than one would think. Sometimes we add secondary calls to action to our site without even thinking about it and inadvertently distract the user from what they really should be doing. And I think a great example of this is adding those retweet icons or the Facebook buttons to your site. These are calls to action. They're calls to action to say, hey, talk about us and how great we are. But what would you prefer a person to be doing? Tweeting or buying your product? And there's a danger that if you put these kinds of calls to action on the site, they will distract users from what you ultimately want them to be doing.
Mm.
So once you decide on what your calls to action are, the next step really is to entice users to actually click. So we need to look at motivating users to take action. Now, there's been a lot been written about, you know, about completing calls to action and getting somebody to do that. The truth is you can't make somebody do something they don't want to. It is, however, possible to nudge them.
Can if you've got a gun?
No, you can't. They've still got a choice. They've got a choice to die. That's still a choice.
Mm. Yeah, okay. You can push more strongly, shall we say.
Yes. Unfortunately, you can't shoot someone, or probably fortunately, you can't shoot someone over the internet. Otherwise, flame wars could get out of hand very quickly. Personally, I thought, just as I was thinking this through, I thought of five techniques for encouraging users to complete calls to action. And I will take you through these five techniques now.
Okay.
Number one is carefully wording your calls to action. How calls to action worded makes huge difference to how users respond. You've got to use active language such as learn,
repeat,
place,
it over and
add,
over and over again, really
submit,
quickly.
Submit,
brainwash,
get, modify, edit, etc. Also ensure that you're using tangible words. Use something tangible that users can relate to in their own lives. For example, instead of writing, save a child's life for only £2, write, save a child's life for less than the cost of a Starbucks coffee.
Really?
Mm, it's more effective. Been proved.
Okay.
Through something I won't cite because I'm not citing my sources on this show just to annoy you.
Okay, fair enough.
I can't remember where I've read it. But I have read it.
And it you know, this is microcopy we're talking about.
Absolutely, yeah.
Make it understandable. Well, and that's it, really. It is, though, isn't
no.
it?
No, it's more than that. Because that's just making it, by making it just understandable, you're not nudging
people. You're not
people.
Encouraging people.
You're not encouraging people. I'm saying things like active language, making it more personal. And the other thing is by using words like you and your to in your calls to action makes a difference. You do this, or, you know, that
sometimes
kind of
it really gets on your nerves, though, when you feel like you're being manipulated. Those wonderful adverts at the moment for, I think it's Direct Line Insurance, when Alexander Armstrong is pretending that he's being... that the guy who's selling it to him is he keeps going, ah, oh, that sales technique, you
yes,
just led forward.
Yes.
Right? You know, I think we're all, as consumers, getting more and more aware of being sold at.
Oh, absolutely.
But or being manipulated.
Absolutely,
even.
I agree with that. But it still works.
What I'm saying
it still
is,
works.
Well, what is it, for one? I think that it you're referring to there, it has to change. It can't be the same because we are getting more and more savvy.
Yes, but the principles, I still think, stand.
Okay.
I think it does, it works. I mean, there's a great book. There's a book you need to read called Nudge. And Nudge tackles all this kind of thing about how psychologically there are certain triggers that you can cause with people that do have a positive effect. And I'm not saying we aren't becoming more cynical. I think we are. And I think these things will work less effectively.
Savvy rather than cynical.
Or it's savvy then.
It's different.
All right, yeah, fine. I think these things are less effective than they were, but that doesn't mean taking them away is going to work better.
No, I'm actually agreeing with you, going back to the carefully wording.
Yes.
Is really important.
But it's not enough just to make it clear. It has to be convincing as well as clear. Anyway, that was point number one. I get through five of these. It's going to take a while if Marcus is going to disagree with everything I say.
I agreed with you.
Second one is focusing on feelings and benefits, not just features. So describe your product, service, or call to action is not enough. This is what I just said. You have to make users want it and And to do that, you need to describe the benefits it will have on them personally, because we're all selfish bastards. Right? It's not enough to say how it will benefit their customers or their business, for example. You have to say how it will benefit them. You need to talk in terms of the benefits to them individually. However, you can go even further and engage with people's emotions. Instead of just talking about benefits, talk about feelings. For example, do you hate dealing with customer complaints? Our products will increase satisfaction, so reducing the stress of dealing with angry customers. This focuses on how the product or service will make them feel and make their lives easier. And I put a great example in the blog post that goes with this, of a website that focuses heavily on users' feelings and how things make them feel. So check out that example, because it really is quite a compelling one. Right, so that's number two. Number three, third technique, is to remove any sense of risk, right? The major reason users resist completing a call to action is because they associate a risk with it. They associate a call to action with a danger or a problem. So you need to have a promise that addresses the user's concerns. So whether it's outlining your return policy or giving a clear statement about your approach to privacy, or whether it's all of those things help to reassure a user so they're not worrying. And Zappos is a great example of this. Buying shoes online, there's so much that could go wrong. Is it going to be comfortable? Will it look right? So they offer a 365-day return policy with free delivery in both directions. You know, and so that kind of deals with the risk associated with completing their call to
we
action.
Should have
which you
chocolate try. With every click.
Ah, now that's the next thing.
Oh, okay.
Because that's a different thing. Because giving chocolate, they don't worry, am I going to get chocolate with this? They're worrying about other things. But
yes, is this going to cost me?
Yeah, what you're talking about there is number four, which is offer a carrot, but also wield the stick, right? And you're talking about free chocolate with every purchase is a carrot, isn't it? Well, it's not. It's chocolate, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. You can have chocolate that looks like carrots.
That's true. So website owners have successfully been using the carrot and stick approach to encourage users to complete calls to action for some time. So a carrot is obviously an incentive and a stick is a limitation. For example, incentive might be, now I can think about it, is chocolate. So an incentive might be discounts, while a stick might be availability, for example, limited availability.
Yeah. So why now, while we've only got one left?
Exactly. So, for example, Carsonify do a great job at this with their workshops, right? So they give a carrot in the form of a discount, but a stick in the form of only the first 10 people to book a workshop place get the discount.
Yeah, and that annoys me. It's not enough, Ryan, if you're listening.
Go on.
Because it makes... annoys me is wrong. I don't think it's right. I mean, I'm sure he'd disagree with me because they're still doing it, but it makes me think, can't be bothered, they're already gone.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. So perhaps that isn't the best example.
Yeah, I mean, if it was 50 or 100...
But these are workshops we're talking about here.
Yeah,
that's why the number is so low, because there's only 30 people in the workshop.
Yeah, but I still think...
Is this a reflection on Carsonified or how lazy you are?
Probably me.
Anyway, technique number five for encouraging people to complete calls to action is the use of peer pressure. We are highly influenced by the behaviour of others, and we don't think we are. We pretend we're all individuals, but we're not. We are herd. We do what other people say. We are sheep, and we follow blindly. You don't, obviously, Marcus. You are the exception in the whole universe. And as is every person, we all think we're not. But again, Nudge is a great book for that. What was the other one that I read that was like that? I can't remember what it was now. That's going to really annoy me. But essentially, all through this book, I was going, that doesn't apply to me. And then he would give an example, which I've done myself. And it's like, you bastard.
Exactly.
So we are highly influenced, whether we like to think we are. And so if somebody else is completing a call to action, then we're more likely to complete it ourselves. And, everybody knows that testimonials are an example of this. But there are other things as well. Obviously, other people tweeting or reviews, ratings, what other people have looked at. You know, Amazon use these kinds of things to great effect to encourage us to make purchases. And it does influence our decision making. So look for opportunities to reinforce the calls to actions with recommendations for others. And again, I've got a great example of this, which is a campaign that exists to fix Outlook, because Outlook uses a crap rendering engine that makes it really hard to build HTML emails for it. And so this site demonstrated the level of support that thousands of people were supporting them by basically taking their tweet profile pictures and making those the background to the website. So you see this mass of people that have said, yes, I support this campaign.
There are lots of things like this. You know, if you're selling a product, the 37 signals thing where they have the one just above standard, slightly bigger.
Yes.
And all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, I ought to go for that one because that's the one everyone goes for. Not thinking, well, the designer just made it a bit bigger.
Yeah. And we say, we know all of this stuff in our heads, but we still fall for it anyway.
Yeah. And with charities, like we do a lot of work with charities. And stating that so-and-so, you know, David just donated £20.
Yes.
Or somehow conveying that the average donation is £25 or $25 makes everyone think, well, I can't do any less than that.
Yeah, you know. Absolutely.
So, yes, of course it works.
Annoying that we're so easy.
I agree entirely with everything you say, Paul.
Good. That's why I have you on the show, merely to rubber stamp my statements. So that's really about it. So as I'm doing at the end of every show so far, if you haven't noticed, we're doing a what's next. Hopefully I've demonstrated the importance of calls to action and increasing your site's in the process of increasing your site's ROI. Admittedly, this is probably not a surprise to you. I suspect you already knew this. However, more importantly, I've outlined some ways to identify those calls to action.
Brainwash your customers and users.
I'm sure, yeah, basically.
I'm sure we've talked about things like this in the past. Well, we have, probably more than once.
Probably.
And I accuse you of brainwashing people then.
I suspect so.
And
so,
nothing has changed.
Three actions that I think people need to be taking this week before next week's show. Your first piece of homework, boys and girls, is to establish your main actions. Write a list of your site's main calls to action. Next, prioritise this list so your designer can ensure the users focus on the right actions first. Also consider how one call to action leads to the next one, all right? Second piece of homework, carefully craft your actions. Once you've got your main calls to action, work with a designer and a copywriter to ensure they're both engaging and immediately obvious to users. And third and finally, give every page a call to action. Make sure that your content authors add calls to action to every page. Users shouldn't be left at a dead end. So consider implementing content templates that I mentioned earlier. So there we go. There's a little bit of advice on calls to action. I hope that is useful. Don't forget to check out the forum where we're going to be discussing do you use URLs as spam filter, which is a bit bizarre, and do Apple stores suck? Those are the two things we're going to be discussing in there. Also, don't forget to pick up the book where I go into all of this in so much detail and a great presentation where I touch on this stuff as well. All of that information is available at boagworld.com/season/1. That is the numeral one, not the word one. There
Thank
we go.
You for that, Paul. I had dropped off then.
I'm going to be a newsreader moment. I'm okay. Banging my notes on the table. I think we're done, aren't we?
We are.
Good show. I particularly enjoyed your contribution today, Marcus.
What, the chocolate contribution?
No, the bit where you said you agreed with me.
Oh, that bit?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I was lying.
Okay, and next week we'll be covering...
Episode 5.
Interesting one. The refinement cycle. Well, we're talking about evolution versus revolution in your website and how actually evolving your website over time is much more effective in generating return on investment than going through periodic redesigns.
Okay.
Okay.
Makes sense.
Should we say goodbye?
Let's say goodbye.
You can say goodbye first because normally it's always me. And okay. I'm going to let you go first, Mark.
Thank you, Paul. So kind. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye. Bye. What I would like to comment on, if I may,
you
Marcus,
can. Yes.
Is do you really need the text that big on that bit of paper to be able to read it? Is your vision going?
Are we
including all this, by the way?
Completely normally, completely naturally, yes, my eyes are getting worse.
Are you really? You're going to come in with those like half moons and you're going to look over the top of them in that old person way.
Yeah, old person condescending, really, Paul,
yes,
kind of way. But no, that isn't the reason why this is so large. This is so large, and this is actually worse. I looked at it as I was hitting the print button and thought, that's not using enough of the paper. So I needed some. So I made it bigger. So I felt like I was wasting less paper.
Yeah, but you're using more ink.
I know. It's mad, isn't it?
Do you know the amount of ink that
I could have just said yes.
Actually, that's really interesting. It was a talk I was at when I was over in the States. And one of the speakers was talking about how designers can be more environmentally friendly and that kind of thing. It was a bit pretentious, but quite good, actually. I quite enjoyed it. One of the things he said is somebody has created a system where you can run a font through it and it will reproduce the font, but with tiny pinprick holes in it so that the font uses 25% less ink when it's printed out.
That's kind of good.
Which is kind of clever.
Yes.
Well, you've just killed the environment. A seal has died because of you.
Just for a joke.
Just for that. Just for some... Well, it better be a damn good joke.
I blame our listeners.
Why?
Because they want the jokes.
They insist on this
they
part.
They insist on it. Anyway, fortunately, it's a short joke after that rambly start. So here we go. I've just bought a table for... I'm sorry. I remember that. Start again. I've just booked a table for my wife and I on Valentine's Day. But I can see it ending in tears. She's hopeless at snooker.
That is terrible. Why did I think there was rain in that joke?
I've no idea.
We were having a conversation before I did that. Can you remember what the joke was? And I said, I think it's got rain in it.
It made me laugh. Saw it on Twitter. So there we go.
Right, cite your source.
It was Michael Vaughan, ex-cricket captain, retweeted it, but I can't remember who by.
So there we go. That's a really good ending to the show.
stop now.